Huh. All set?
Yeah. Now, this is one you wrote.
Yep.
And what do you call it?
I just put in the Hills of Mighty High. I don't know how to call it. I did it quite a number of years ago, I guess. Back when I was flying more. See, the hills are mighty high and the clouds hang low. Can't see the sky above nor the ground below. Compass going wild and my gas is low. All I get is static on the radio. High above where the wind's still free, a siren's call to men like me. How do you tell the one you love how much your heart belongs in the sky above? Chills down my back and sweat on my brow. Sure would do some praying, but I don't know how. Going to meet my maker when it comes my time. Ice on the struts and it looks like rhyme. High above where the wind's still free, a siren's call to men like me. How do you tell the one you love how much your heart belongs in the sky above? There's a break in the clouds, the fields below. Everything cleared up on the radio. No, my darling, don't you cry. I'll be home with you when the moon rides high. High above where the wind's still free, a siren's call to men like me. How do you tell the one you love how much your heart belongs in the sky above?
That's terrific. How long did you fly?
Oh, I've flown off and on for about 55 years.
Really? And you started?
Most of it off. I only flew when I had money and I broke most of the time.
But you started in
Back in 36.
That's amazing.
Went up first in 35. So that was interesting way back in 26 for the war come along. As you see, when I first went out to Toledo, and I first see my first plane, I was probably about 5 years old out here to a carnival or something in Montpelier. I think it's probably about where the high school is now, but I'm not sure.
And that
I didn't know what it was. I thought it was a bird or something. And I thought it's funny, people, it was a big bird with people riding it. I could see him get out, but that's about it.
And from then on, you were interested in.
Yeah. Thing is, the war kind of knocked things apart here. Now, this is a poem I read. It's either by Hillier or Miller. That was back in the 30s. And I guess his mother must have threw the book out or something. It's in. So I can sing better than I can read it. So that's what I did. I put some of this to my own tune. And it's the name of, I remember, it was Back Farm.
So your mother actually read you this and then...
No, I read it.
You read it and then...
In some book somewhere. And I
then
put
you
it
liked
to
it, so you put it to a tune?
Yeah, because I can do that better than I can recite it.
Isn't that
fun?
That's neat.
See, I call it... Well, the name of it was Back Farm. This I remember. In solemn pause the forest waits the signal to return, while within our rotting garden gate the leaves of autumn burn. Farther to sun we hold our fields against the siege of Tars, knowing our weaker sons will yield the land no longer theirs. Knowing a wind and sun and rain will fling its green stampedes, while we who harvested the grain lie buried under weeds. That one I remember. And this one was another one. It's back. I read about the same time. I think the same book, small booklet of poems. And this is, I don't know which, I know one was Hiller and one was Miller, and it's, and I don't know which went which, but this is on, it's the name of it, I remember, it's a Silver Ship, and it's on Flying Too. There are trails that a land may follow as years of his boyhood slip. But I would soar like a swallow on the wings of a silver ship, guiding my bird of metal, one with throbbing frame, floating down like a petal, roaring up like a flame, winding the wind that scatters smoke from the chimney's lip, tearing the clouds to tatters with the wings of a silver ship. Snug in my coat of leather, up where the falcons flare, there in the purple twilight, brushed by a comet's hair. And then I think there's another verse or so, but there are trails that a lad may follow as years of his boyhood wane, but I would soar like a swallow on the wings of a silver plane. This is different ones put a little in it that's somewhat kind of cynical, I guess. call it Mr. Bluebeard. There's a lot of other verses, but I don't know many of them. Here's to the jumpers, everyone. Here's to the men that fly. And here's to those that walk the wings. And here's to those that try. We're sorry for Mr. Bluebeard. We're sorry to cause him pain. What a terrible spree there's sure to be when he comes back again. What a terrible spree you're sure to see when he comes back again. Here's to every dream we've had, shattered past recall. Here's to those that hit the top, and here's to those that fall. We're sorry for Mr. Bluebeard, we're sorry to cause him pain. What a terrible spree there's sure to be when he comes back again. Here's to those that go above, and here's to those that burn, and here's to all the lucky ones, the ones that don't return. We're sorry for Mr. Bluebeard, we're sorry to cause him pain. What a terrible spree there's sure to be when he comes back again. That's kind of a saying in our outfit.
It was.
Yeah, they get kind of cynical at times after things went long enough. So.
Well, now, did you fly during World War II?
No. I went in, I washed out about 3 months from getting my wings. I'd flown before the war, and the worst thing you could do is fly before the war and then go into service. You had your way, they had theirs, and you tried to break your way and get theirs. And we had just too many. I had a friend of mine, he was a Czech pilot in the Navy, and he said he had orders to wash out 90% of it. Of them, and then a little later it come through and wash out 98%. He said, I've only hit two of them that I ever had to check out, it couldn't fly. It's just they had so many of them. But you had that one, so.
Which
I guess that makes them.
They're terrific. This is which one? The.
That's the one about the fellow singing the sign.
Oh, the first one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got them all marked, see, as it went on the tape, and I marked where it stopped. I let it lap a little in between, so if you want to put something in between on it.
Oh, I see. This is your tape. Great.
I let it lap in between the from time one started, so you had a little time to put something else in between.
Oh.
You probably know it if you play it.
Oh, thank you.
That's all. These.
You want a copy of your tape?
No.
You sure?
I know the things here. I'd do it again if I want it. No, I don't have to.
Okay. I think it's amazing what you still remember.
Yeah, but I can't get, I get halfway through the song before I get the tune of it anymore. I'll go get you that. I haven't seen it the other day about Uncle Nat.
Okay.
I like it. I'm sure I had in here.
I thought I would try and go see your aunt.
What's that?
I thought I would try and go see your aunt in Brattleboro.
I'll put this on it. Get a little better. What was that?
I thought I would go try and go see your aunt in Brattleboro.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It might not, it might, want to call in ahead, you know. And
yeah.
I got a sister, I think Hester, said she might know something. She had my mother last in, but I don't think she remembered. Oh, it must be the one I didn't bring out. I'll go in and get the rest of it.
Here.
Okay, just stick over there out of the way. I'll go and get the... Yeah, they had the thing on it. And I think of something else there. Yeah, maybe in here. I know I see it just the other day. That's one shot too on the head. It ain't all. I'll find you another time. See it right now, so.
Oh, don't worry.
It, probably if you're back in. You might be able to get a little out of my sister.
Now, she's the one that lives over in Northfield?
Yeah, over in, Williamstown.
Williamstown.
Oh, yeah, that reminds me. I kind of made a map so you could, boy, you know, I was thinking of it. Should be here somewhere. I thought it'd make it easier to find her.
Oh, thank you.
If I'd figure out how I did it. Oh yeah, this is the road that goes to Barry and goes up to, and this south Barry goes up there. And this is where your Ford motorcycle and stuff is, and you come off the interstate.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a light there.
Mm-hmm.
And you go up that road, up there, and they used to call it Middle Road. And you go up, and there's a road on the other side here. But you go right up through up here, and this takes you up into Graniteville, and this takes you out to my sister's. And there used to be an overpass there, and there's a gate, iron gate right there where they got the quarries. And they've taken down the overpass, but it's still, you can see where it is. Go up there and just over a little hill, and it's the first road to your right. And there's a trailer up here, and a house trailer, and some other. And you go out here, the right, and here's the first place on the right.
Okay.
There's another place out here, and the road goes on by, and Phil Nora Gibbs, the name.
Okay, great. And you thought she might have some photographs, too.
Didn't you? Yeah, I got some, but the, what's the, Ora's phone number, hon? He told me, he's a young fellow, he's lived over in Lincoln. And he went out and he got a bottle one night. Was heading home and he was feeling pretty good. And he said that an old couple had a, on a sharp turn, it could start up a mountain, had a house built right off one side. And you could step from the road in those days around the top of the house. So he stepped off and started dancing on the roof. And the roof caved in with him. He landed in what they call the living room. They didn't have one. It was a shack with just 2-3 rooms. He landed in there and just missed the kitchen table. And the old fellow says, "What's going on there?" And Riley says, "Hey, how'd you like a drink?" And the old fellow got up and he lit a lamp and sat there and finished the bottle off. Nowadays, if you come through the roof, it's so easy. He says, all the other half-inch boards that the old fellow had scrounged up, you know, build a place.
Oh, I was going to get you to tell me again, because I didn't get it on tape, the story of Jack Larrow, which I think is terrific, you know, where...
Oh, on the, up the Skeeto?
Yeah.
Well, one night, Jack, he used to work at all hours, and Mad River had an old Unimog, it's a German Jeep, and they had a blower on it for blowing snow and plowing, and it would go along about 2 miles an hour if you geared it way down. And he was out using it, and he come be about 5 or 6 o'clock, dark, or just getting dark. And he put it away and going home for supper, and then he was going to come back and work the rest of the night. And he got all locked up and heading for his car, and a fellow come along and asked him, pull him out. Well, Jack said, I'm going home. He says, can't you get out, get somebody else? The fellow, oh, no, he couldn't. But they wouldn't. And he kept at Jack. Jack says, okay. So he went and unlocked the garage and got out the Unimog and went down below where the nursery was and the back road. And the fellow run the Jeep off and four-wheel drive into over the bank in the snow. Well, he couldn't get out. So Jack hitched on him and pulled him back out. And the fellow says, I'm all set now. Well, Jack says, what about something? The fellow says, what do you mean? Well, Jack says, how about a couple dollars? Well, he says, I know all about you fellows. He says, you take that. He says, you're looking at something like that. And he says, you take it and buy a beer or something. He says, and he kept on that. And made Jack pretty burned up. He used the mat, he put that old Unimog in the low gear and pushed the fellow right back in again. And the fellow says, there, see what you did? He says, now you got to pull me out. Jack says, I don't have to do a thing. He says, you get somebody else pull you out. He put the Jeep away, the Unimog away and went home. And Jack had been told by the manager, we all had a couple weeks before, that give him a hand one if they skied there or something, but we weren't in the towing business, but they pulled him out or something. They charged a couple or $5 or something like that. Said, don't let him get away for nothing. But he said, we're not in the towing business. And Jack would have turned that over because he says, honest could be. But the fellow made a big thing out of it. And I was, a few years later, I was telling Stanley Martin down the, when you run the garage in Waitsfield, down Bonnet's garage, and I was telling him about it. He said, oh, yes. He says, I remember that. He says, I got a call that night. He said, I went up and I pulled the fellow out and it cost him $25.
I asked Jack about it. He was very funny. He said, he'd been working for all day and he knew he was going to have to go back for half the night.
Yeah. He locked everything up, it was almost his car and he figured he'd be home so long and then be back and at work because he's a regular workaholic, Jack was.
And Earl Long told me about a guy skiing who kept bringing people up free, and Earl said, you got to pay. Yeah. And the third day, he stopped them. He was running the rope tow and stopped them halfway up the mountain, and they had to come down and pay.
Well, let's see what I was going to say. It's something right in mind, I can't remember right now. It wasn't that. It's I'll think of it in a minute.
That's the way I am.
Oh, I can't think of it right now.
The other thing I was going to ask you about was that story you told me that, again, I didn't get on tape about, that accident you had with the logs that came off, and luckily you went under the truck. It was down at, down at Baird's Mill?
Yeah. His old Andy, the boy runs it now, his father said he thought his boy or one of the other around there was reckless. He thought maybe they'd get hurt, but he didn't expect it to me. What was this fellow come in a load of logs on a straight flatbed truck, and he had a stake on it front and back to hold him on. Well, he stood by the cab, I reached out by the headboard and pry his out, and I stood at the back. And I pried mine out instead of coming off, come off slow, the whole load started. And he had a load of 12-foot logs, and the last one is 16-foot long. And I see I couldn't get out past it, so I ducked in the truck behind the rear wheels. And the log hit, being 16-footer, he landed and it swung around. And I was on my hands, knees, and then the truck hit me in the back, rolled right up and hit me in the back of the head, and drove my head down into the ground. And it got black for just a minute. I remember thinking, oh, this is it. That's all it is. And I think I sort of come out of it. And I could feel it run out and hit the back of the head. Pretty good clip. But it bounced back. which is probably a good thing. And so I got on my feet, and the handy come around, check on me. He told me to go over the brook something. He told me to sit down. I said no, because I knew if I would, I'd pass out. So I just held my arms across my stomach and bent over to keep the blood, you know, from pooping out. And by that time, my left eye was closed, and I had a little blood coming out, you know, my nose and that. And so I went over the brook and washed out, and the other eye was closing pretty good. Didn't ever get quite all closed. And just a few more logs to scale. I'd scale most of them on the truck. That scale, we ended up top of the dugway in Dr. Quimby's office there. And he had the doctor check me out. And the doctor said, how long was you knocked out? And I said, I wasn't knocked out. He said, you had to be. You had to be unconscious for a while. I said, I wasn't. And he said, no, he wasn't. He said, I never see anybody come onto his feet so fast in my life. And well, he said, the doc says, blow that, like that. He said, he should have been knocked out. But anyway, the next day they took went out month prior and he got some x-rays. But I guess all right, but I still think it chipped a vertebrae in the back of my neck. Because after that, I'd have a click in my left ear. And 3 months later, I was deaf in it. And the next day, the doctor gave me about 3 pills to take because my head was swollen and went back about halfway around my scalp and raised about an inch or so. And he gave me 3 pills, I think, to take one about every 2 hours for pain. Well, it pained some, but it wasn't that bad. But next day, my face and everything looked like a balloon. And I was every color of the rainbow for about another month, trailing my waist. You know, black, blue, and yellow. So it was on my face. And the next night, after that, my folks come up. My father said, and he wouldn't know me if he didn't know who I was. But that happened on a Wednesday night. And the next Monday, I went back to work. I had that big swelling over my left temple, forehead there, over my eye. And the doctor gave me an elastic bandage so I'd hold it and see if he'd take it down, but it didn't. And after about a month, he had me come up one noon to lance it, and he couldn't do it. He said that to come down that night, he'd have his wife help him and get it out. So I went back to work. That was about 1, and a little after, and 2 o'clock, and he shut the mill down. And I said, he wasn't going to work no more that day. I said, well, I don't mind. I said, I don't figure well. He says, that's why I'm shutting down. He says, I know you don't. So I went down that night, and they drained it out. It was just like thick tar. It was all blood in there. And I always said I had a numbskull, because since I had to freeze it, I have at times I was spell when it feels numb in places. And, well, it doesn't happen very often now, but it used to happen a couple, 3 times a year. It only last about 5 minutes, but my head would feel like it's crushed right together. It's an awful it pain. It wasn't a headache or anything, but an awful funny feeling, almost scary, you know.
Gosh.
And but now, from a year or so, once in a while, I feel it for just a few seconds or so. But I guess it must have been, and a doctor couldn't, like I said, he couldn't believe why I was knocked out, because it hit me so hard back of the head, it broke the skin, that, and the blood fell back right at the base of my skull.
It's the most incredible accident. You were very lucky.
Huh?
You were very lucky.
Well, I told a neighbor one time that something about, was talking. I said, well, I got 9 lives like a cat. She says, oh, no, you haven't. She says, I've seen you lose several of them since we knew you. We knew you for a number of years, and I lost them before. I'm not superstitious, but I don't dare to add up how many times I missed. Because I think probably running a little over 9.
But that is, how old were you when that happened?
Oh, I was 35, 40.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I must have been around 30. Yeah, between 35 and 40, because I come home, all my children just about ready to go to school. They were for them. That's what we'd be born into, you know. Has to be left with four kids.
That's quite a story. Well, did you work for Mad River as well as Jack?
I worked for Ward for a number of years, and then I went to work the summers for Andy Baird, and then in the wintertime I'd work up in the ski area.
What would you do up there?
I worked atop the single lift, the old single, they call it.
Must have been cold, wasn't it?
Well, you get used to it. After, I used to keep the same amount of clothes on in the shack where there's some heat and outside. And after a couple of weeks, you got to see, you didn't notice it. Someone went in there and take everything off. And then when we got, there's more than one of us, we'd time it. So they'd spend an equal amount of time outside and equal in. And that worked pretty good.
So would you ride up every morning on the chairlift?
First one up in the morning and check out the safeties and that. Usually the last one down at night. They got where the ski patrol would come out and watch the last 10 minutes while we was going down and shut the lift down. They'd get the last, they call up from the bottom, tell them what's the last chair coming up.
And I hear that some of the, I don't know whether it was the ski patrol, they used to ride shovels down the mountain?
Well, some of them did some. I tried it, but I didn't like it very well.
I guess it was Earl that was telling me that you'd go around in a circle. You couldn't steer it well.
Well, we had one fellow, he worked for the white oil company down here for a while, gas company, but he had to quit because of cancer, Kenny Wimble. He went up when he was in school. The first time he's ever on skis, he started down the chute. That's right under the lift. That's one of the steepest, most expert trails there. If he had been a kid, it probably killed him.
And he went straight down?
I don't know. He must have fell down some. But I guess one of the best ones is I had a fellow named Ole, and I think he was a Dane. Or Norwegian, and he's over. I used to come up with a fellow named Patterson. This fellow was a Swede, but they were over in this country. Uli, he was going to learn ski. He never skied. He got him over from, I think it was Denmark. So he skied some, but he'd come up weekends. He got up above mid station, where he's up second tower up. He started down, and he lost control. He comes straight down and fellow they called Richard Barton, we used to call him Super Barton. He was on the platform, and there's a shack on the edge of the platform, and they got off, and he was between him and the shack. He'd be on the other side, so he'd hit safety if it had stop, you know. But he was standing there, and his fellow come down on the downhill side of the chairs across the platform, and why he didn't hit the safety cord, I don't know. He must have been bent way over past Super, so he pretty blew his hat off, and I guess Super went about 3 feet into the air between him and the shack, and just missed the chair that's coming onto the platform. And he's really traveling. He sailed way out, and the platform's up probably 15 feet above the 10, 15 feet above the ground, and it sloped right away from it down the hill. Way out and landed down the snow and into some brush and didn't get hurt.
That is amazing. But,
and never touched a thing.
Well, you must have seen some pretty good accidents there, too.
Oh, we didn't have any.
We had
one year, but and they didn't get, the one that got hurt the worst, I guess, fell off a chair and hit the base or something and broke a few ribs or something. But it's because the cable jumped the bull wheel come off. Uh-huh. But the reason was that somebody caught his parka string, and the fellow at mid station happened to be too far away from the safety cord to hit it. And by the time he did, the chair had gone outside of the guide, they call it there. And they ruined the chair, of course, and pulled the thing off. And they dumped off three or four of them. The only ones that got off, fell out, were the ones that had the gates open. A few of them, it was coming in, they opened their gate and threw off three or four at the top. It didn't hurt them, it shook them up a little bit. And the ones at the bottom, and and got around to close the gate. And this fellow was one of the towers, I guess. And he was the only one, I guess, that had to go into the hospital. Some of the others went, but he had the only one that had to stay. And there was one big heavy girl there. And she sat there, and they were bouncing off from front and behind her down by the bottom, and she was there and wrote it right out. And she come up a few years ago, 2 or 3 years before I got done up there. And she had a whole new outfit and fleas could be. She lost 100 pounds. She was a big girl anyway, but she had lost 100 pounds. She still was a big girl, but she was awful tickled. She'd bought a whole new outfit, real pleased on it. But that's the only real accident we've had. We've had some get, one or two get bumped or something, you know, or thing, but that was, and that was the cable come off, I think it was on the Monday, I think it was, or a Sunday. And they had all going by Tuesday, but right back on, but they wouldn't let them run it to Thursday. I'd check out everything and that. But they haven't had near the accidents having most of the other places. Most of them are expert skiers, and they start in when they're small, you know. Some of them hardly walk, and they go out and start skiing that. They grow up there. I know that some of them come from another ski area or something, and they get all upset about it sometimes. The neighbor of mine, that he and his wife were in the store down here one time, and said one woman's telling another, she said, oh, it was awful. She was up mad, and she said it was awful. And so said they was checking out, and when the checkout girls asked another woman, says, how was up Mad River that day? Well, it's always just a lovely ski, and she says, is it nice? So my neighbor asked me about it. Well, I said, we thought it was all pretty.